This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hi, and I'm Virgil Rodriguez here with season two of A Race of Your Own, where we talk about how inspiration leads to resilience. And this week's guest, I'm really excited to have. I've known her for a long time, and we went to high school together. She is an American journalist who has been a national reporter for CNN Money for Race Inequality in America, as well as a staff reporter at the New York Times, where she created and covered a beat on race and ethnicity for the national desk, as well as reporting for the Metro section and the business desk. She was in 2010, she was a part of the team at the New York Times and a team of journalists that won an Emmy Award for a documentary called From 1 in 8 Million about the individual stories of New Yorkers. And in 2013, she worked with Jill Abramson, who was the executive editor of the New York Times, to assign her as a national reporter on the newly created race and ethnicity beat. And she's done a lot of other stuff that we're going to talk about, Ms. Tanzina Vega.
Hello, Virgie Rodriguez. Nice to meet you. I say meet you. See?
Nice to meet you again.
Because we have known each other. I don't want to. We shouldn't say.
No.
So let's not say.
No.
Let's just let people imagine.
Yes.
We went to LaGuardia. That's all they need to know. We don't need to know anything else.
No.
About our past lives or creative histories or anything like that. But let's just say we have a long creative past.
Yes.
We've had it for a while.
A long, long time. And now we have kids and things.
Oh, my God.
You know
who?
And it's my birthday twin. I share a birthday with your son.
My son and you have the same birthday. And I told him, I said, you know, you're going to meet your birthday twin today. And he was like,
I have a birthday twin.
But he was like, we're going to a studio. And like, he walks in downstairs and he's like, this is my first time. So like,
we gave him a little tour. So
he's like, I'm here. Where's the studio? I want to see what's happening.
He's like, I want to be on camera.
I think so. I think he's got the music.
So instrument? Composing? Like
composing, performing, dancing.
Maybe I know. Teach him some moves.
I think you need to. He's like, mommy, I want to learn hip hop, dance. Like, he's really into it.
I love that.
He starts dancing. Like, when we hear musicians on the subway, he stops and does a routine that he creates.
Well, that's an Aquarius child for you.
Well, there you go.
I used to do the same thing to my mom on the subway, and she'd be so embarrassed. And she'd be like, that's my child.
That's my Aquarius child. I'm like, let him. Because he really is a passionate dance habit.
That's an Aquarius child for
okay,
you.
Okay, there you go. Thank you.
Well, welcome.
Hi.
I don't know where to start. Where do we start? There's so much to say.
Oh, my God. Well, I've been in this business for 2 decades now.
That's amazing.
Journalism and teaching. So I've been parallel tracking academia and journalism. So I've done both of those. I had a baby a few years ago, so that changed a lot of things. I am no longer in sort of like the traditional media world anymore, but I'm doing even more interesting things, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where do you want me to start?
Well, one thing that I loved, because I've rewatched it before this, right? After you said, yes, I'm available, I can do it. And I was like, yes.
I'm coming after a play date, but I will be there.
Yes. You have a kid's play date. But you did something for CNN Money called Black and a Member of the Top 1%. And I rewatched it again. And I didn't realize how short it was. Like, I was like, it's only 6 minutes long. And I was like, oh, this needs to be longer. CNN Money needs to bring this back. But you talked about, you investigated the historical and contemporary racial barriers to wealth creation in the U.S., and one of the statistics that was shared was that the average African-American household holds 6 cents for every dollar of wealth held by the typical white household, and Blacks make up 1.7% of the top 1% of wealthy Americans.
Correct. And now, if people want to understand that, because that's a big stat.
Yes.
And the issue here is about wealth, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about is not your income. Let's say you make $100,000 a year. That's your income, right? That's not your wealth. Your wealth is what you have when you strip away everything else and you say, what do I actually have under my feet? Do I own a home? You know, once you take away my debt, what do I have left? Well, white Americans, historically, have, on average, this isn't everybody, I just want people to freak out, like, oh my God, not me. Yes, not you. But the point of this story was to figure out who is the 1%, right? Because we kept hearing about the 1%, especially in the 2016 election, right? So I set out and I said, let me find out who this 1% is. Like, what is the racial breakdown?
For Black Americans.
For anybody. Who in this country is part of the 1%?
Right.
So I called the St. Louis Federal Reserve. And you can do that when you're a journalist and you say, hey, I want some help. And I said, I want to understand. Can we break this down? Can we actually find a percent of the 1%? And when they came back, they said, we've done the breakdown. 95% of the wealthiest Americans in this country are white.
Okay.
The remaining 5% of that 1% are Black, Latino, Asian, and Native American. So we own such a tiny percentage of the overall wealth. And when you look at the fact that Black Americans have such a tiny, I mean, less than 2% of the 1%, right? And we're talking, that includes Oprah, Jay-Z, Beyonce, right? But even when you look beyond those folks, right? Because that was kind of what I wanted to do. I said, well, yeah, we know that, you know, in media and celebrity culture, obviously you're going to make a lot of money. But I wanted to find Black Americans who had sort of broken that mold. And one of the ones that we found were Eddie and Sylvia Brown, right?
I love their story.
Do you know? I love them.
I
wanted them to adopt me. I was kind of waiting, lingering, like, hoping
please
like
adopt me.
They would just
can
put
I
me
your adult.
Yes, like yeah. Just you'll never see me. They own so many homes, it'll be fine. Like I told them, I said, I'll just stay in the third floor of the brownstone. Yeah, on the block. It doesn't matter. They did not adopt me, sadly. But
sadly.
But what they had was this experience of growing up dirt poor, as they say. Black and on the wrong side of the tracks, as Eddie said it. And yet they were able to put together a capital management company, right? They have millions of dollars of assets under management. That is almost unheard of. And learning the story about these two and seeing how they not only created their own wealth, but also redistribute that wealth in the community. They reinvest in the community. They're also patrons of the arts. Like these are not people who are, you know, blowing the cash. Like they're creating wealth. And they're distributing wealth. They also hire Black folks to work at Brown Capital Management, right? Deliberately. So they're making a lot of decisions in order to create that wealth. But it's so hard for the rest of us to get there.
Yeah.
To get a piece of that. It's really not easy, especially if you're a person of color in this country.
Yeah. And they were saying, was it them? Was it them or was it the other guest? I think that was the other guest. She was like, something about like she wanted to take out a loan. And like the banks were even like,
oh, you're talking about the woman who
was it them? Because they also said that when they would sell their homes, mm-hmm. they would have to put away their photos of their family.
Right.
Because they were like, if white buyers come in, they don't want to see that this was owned by a Black family.
Oh, yeah. And that's been proven, actually. That was an anecdote from Eddie and Sylvia, right? That they told me that they had to change the photos in their home, remove photos of them as Black owners. And once they did that, the value of the home increased. We've now seen that happen. The New York Times has reported on a number of stories like that. And we also know that, you know, Black home ownership generally of people of color was something that was devastating during the recession, the Great Recession. I know we've had so many intense things happen, but back then, that was one of the biggest things that hurt Black and Brown wealth, right? So we still have, you know, recovery time coming out of that. But at the end of the day, closing that wealth gap, I hate to say it, is going to, I wrote a story once for CNN that says it's going to take about 200 plus years at the rate that we're going
right now, today.
At the rate that we're going right now, today. Now, we've had conversations about reparations, right? We've had other kinds of wealth opportunities trying to be created. But the truth is, wealth is positioned with home ownership. It's positioned with, you know, inheritances. It's, you know, are you getting stock options from your parents? Like all that kind of stuff. Not just having a good income, right? It's beyond a good income. A good income is great, But when you talk about what do I have substantially, like what can I, what's my net worth? What do I own? What can I lean against if I, you know, hit a crisis or something? How much cash do I have in the bank? All of those things for communities of color, on average, are much less than white families.
Wow. Yeah. And that's, I think it's just, there's like this financial literacy thing that doesn't happen until later in life versus I feel like, and I'm sure there's black and brown and everything and Asian, you know, that have that too, that they're teaching their kids at a younger age about financial literacy. But like, it's not, we don't really, at least for me, and I feel like my family and my friends didn't learn about it until later in life. Right.
I think my family was, what the goal was there was to get educated, right? You got to go to college, you got to get your degree, you got to do what you can, right? And so that's a very sort of, that's a way of thinking often with first generation families too, right? Like a lot of them were here because they had to come, they needed to find, you know, so for them, the goal was, as long as my kids are safe and fed and housed, we're good, right? And if they get a degree, we're good. And I think what our generation, Gen X, has shown, at least what I'm seeing, is that, yeah, we did all those right things and we got the degrees and everything. But now the bottom is falling out.
Right.
And now I know that for me and other folks, it's like, wait a minute, what was all that going to college and doing the right thing? And right. Now, you know, if you're a PhD and you work for the federal government, you're unemployed. So I think we're going to see, unfortunately, I don't see the wealth gap closing. I see it widening. Given everything that has been happening, particularly in the workforce, you know, over the past couple of years, the past year almost, you know,
right,
has been devastating. But right. Even before that, you know, we started seeing, I don't want to be doom and gloom. I don't want to say like this then, but
it's a reality.
It's a reality.
And I've had last season, I had somebody named, shout out, producer Patrick, who talks all things entertainment and like the shits.
I know him. He's fabulous.
He's amazing. And he, you know, talks about the industry and the changes and how the economy is being affected. And like, that was last year. Now this year, Governor Newsom just approved like a tax incentive for the state of California to bring some of that entertainment stuff back because there was like no work for a lot of people, right? Yeah. That were working at the studios and stuff. So, you know, it's like, there's like this hope, right? There's like this hope that, oh, there's this thing, but a lot of people are turning to creating
their own content. No, I
that's like,
that.
And people are tapping in and going, you know, that's interesting. I want to listen to that and what's going on there. So, you know, it's like not so much doom and gloom, but it's the reality of really what's happening across all industries. Like,
100%. I mean, coders, tech folks are losing their jobs, and it's no longer a question of profitability for companies, right? It used to be like, if the company is suffering, then we'll have layoffs. You're seeing companies with record profits laying off folks, right? So that is no longer the case. And I think what, as you said, right, people are creating their own stuff. People who are in Hollywood and beyond are looking for the industry to return. We know that the industry is not going to be the same, whether it's journalism, entertainment, what have you, right? With the advent of artificial intelligence, forget about it, right? But there are other opportunities to think creatively. And I think that's upon Generation X in a lot of ways. Like, I'm thinking, wow, I've still got a runway of work years ahead of me, mm-hmm. right? But those years are probably going to look different than they have, right, for the past 20, 25 years. Like, what's coming may not be the same. It may not look the same. In fact, I'm almost certain it's not going to look the same as the before times, let's say, you know? Because we have to think outside of the box.
Yeah. And you know, specifically because this is airing during Hispanic Heritage Month, right? And like a lot of the stuff that you have covered has been the race and ethnicity beat, right? Specifically, and I know we're shooting this in New York City, you know, and so this might be a little more New York centric, right? In that sense, because last year I had some of my guests and they were all shot in like kind of LA. And so kind of like the things that were happening in LA, things in New York, a little different, right? And so, you know, what's important to you, like for the Hispanic community specifically in that sense, when it comes to like financial literacy, right? And like, that's a big question too, because
I mean, I think there's different levels to it, right? I think that, as I said earlier, I think when you're dealing with just, I got to put food on the table, that's primary. Like that I have to put food on the table. I can't think about saving. I can't think about anything else, right? So I think the first thing I'd love to see is an increase in the minimum wage, right? so many people are working at minimum wage. I mean, $7.50 in New York City. That's
$7.50.
That's the federal minimum wage, right?
For New York?
For the whole country. Now, New York City has it $15 an hour, right? But the federal minimum wage is $7.50. Okay. But even on $15 an hour, you can't do much.
I think California is $17.
California fought for getting that wage. You know, I interviewed folks who were on the front lines, fast food workers who were trying to get that. So we know that Latinos in particular over-index in some of those jobs. But the second thing, I think, is something we need to think about as far as, you know, when our parents were working, some of them had access to pensions, right? Which was a thing. Like my dad, I know, guess what? There's something called a pension. Don't be mad. Because some of your parents might have one, which means they're going to get paid out. Now, they're not going to get paid big money,
but it's consistent money, right?
That comes in when you retire. And it used to be you work for the company, you got your pension, and you got your Social Security, and then whatever else you...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Had a retirement, right?
Right.
And maybe your house is paid.
Right.
Right? And so you're fine. That's the dream. That's what everybody wants. We no longer have pensions for the most part. We have things called 401ks, and 401ks are a little riskier, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the point that we have to start understanding. Wait a minute, where's my money going? New York City is outrageously expensive. The average rate for a one-bedroom apartment is hovering around $4,000 plus a month, okay?
And that's a shoebox.
That's a shoebox. And people are like, sure, you know, you go to Brooklyn for $5,000, maybe you'll get two bedrooms and a backyard, but still, we're talking $5,000 a month, right? So what can Latinos do in particular? I think we need to be very smart about what we're earning. We're in a very tough job market right now, which means I'm actually telling folks, if you have a full-time job, if you have the means to stick with that job, stick with it for the moment.
Right.
Because we are in a frozen economy right now, right? That a lot of jobs aren't hiring. They're also not firing. People are very reluctant. So the idea, I think the best advice is to stay put, look at what your financial situation is in the moment. Okay, what do I need? Can you pay down debt, right? If you're able to pay down debt, debt is the one thing that keeps people really stuck, right? Mm-hmm. Can you stop using credit cards, for example, right?
Klarna.
It's just outrageous. You know, people are buying stuff and I'm like, dude, you can't afford it. Right?
Klarna has been a lifesaver. I'm sorry. It just has. It's like, oh, it's being paid off and I'm not taking this crazy interest rate.
Well,
it's
the interest rate is critical.
Hopefully the administration does something. It's those interest rates.
I don't know what they're going to do, but all I know is that people need jobs.
So shout out to EFM Essentials, a startup brand making waves with their performance-driven headwear. I'm featuring their New York hybrid trucker hat, which combines classy city grit with modern performance design, limited drops, premium feel, and a made for people chasing their own race. Go check out their collections today and grab yours before they sell out. Visit them online at EFMEssentials.com or at EFM Essentials. Grab yours and step into your grind.
And right now, that's hard to come by. So I think that honestly, if folks are in a job, you stick with it, you figure out what's your financial path forward. What's your goal? The first thing should really be to pay down debt. If you have debt, especially consumer debt, credit card debt, that's going to keep you drowning. And that's just going to keep, it's just going to spiral.
Right.
You're paying 20% on something, forget about it, right? But get down that debt.
20%.
There are credit cards right now.
That's not the
that the annual percentage. I know. You're like 20.
That's 27.
That's a rate. Come on. That's outrageous.
That's crazy.
You can't, right? So you have to focus on that. What am I, like, tighten the reins. You know what I mean? Bring it in. Think about paying down that. And then other ways, I mean, really the financial investment world is very complicated. It even scares me. And I think that's where you're like, okay, I got the money under the sofa,
under the mattress.
Like, am I gonna? What do I do with it?
And
I
suck.
And I think we're scared. You know, it's scary to have faith in the quote unquote the stock market or the investment when you don't have a lot.
Well, digital currency now too.
Well,
which is a whole other world.
Bitcoin,
to learn.
Like, I don't even.
It's a whole other world to learn.
Can't
learning it. Learning it is like what?
Not. So I think it's a lot. I think we're in a. You know, I think it's a very in the moment. That doesn't feel very expansive financially, mm-hmm. right? But given everything that's going on, it makes sense that it doesn't feel expansive, right?
Right.
People are scared. They want to, they're trying to figure out what's their next move, you
right.
know?
Right. And Hispanics, we, you know, just as a community, the Hispanic community, we just spend.
We spend.
We're one of the higher spenders.
And we're a big market.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we are definitely a consumer market. I used to cover advertising for the New York Times. We were one of the biggest markets out there. I think now also with the political environment that we're experiencing, I think brands and others are trying to maybe reestablish, like, how do we reach out? What's our position on the Latino community, et cetera, et cetera? Because they were, when I was covering advertising, that's all everybody could talk about.
Right.
We're the 11 million, you know, 20 gazillion.
When we go to the movies,
correct.
It's not just, I mean, I go sometimes by myself or like a friend, like some friends, but like it's 10 of us.
And Latinos
it's
have
just,
a lot
we're
of
just what? Big families.
Yeah.
And whether it's here or back home.
Yeah. It's a question of how do you begin to create that sort of wealth, that legacy wealth? Buying a home is one way to do it. You know, savings is another way to do it. I'm not a market expert. I could not even tell you the first thing about when to invest this or that. But I do think we have to be at the very least aware, right? Especially now because so much is changing. And the return on that investment, maybe that college degree, as we're seeing a lot of young people of all races saying, wait a minute, I went and I got this degree. Now what do I do with it? For what? What am I going to do with it? I can't find a job, right?
Right.
So we're in for, I think, a real shift in terms of how we all make a living, frankly.
Yeah.
That's and that has to do directly with our money and with everything else.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like, I mean, living even in Los Angeles and seeing the ICE raids and, you know, people being like, I mean, I'm not even going to get into like the farmlands and what's happening there. And if, you know, if they keep not going to work, we're not going to have fruit. We're not going to have vegetables. Like it's hitting on so many different levels. And I'm like, we haven't started to feel it yet, but we might. And so, I mean, for me, it's like just like about celebrating our culture, though, too, you know, and like kind of sticking together in that sense. Right. Just whether you're Mexican, Dominican, Puerto Rican, like whatever it is, because I feel like there is an attack on the Latino community right now. And I feel like specifically it's fear mongering and it's disheartening for the most part. But it's also like, well, why us? Mm-hmm. What's the problem? Like what, you know, a lot of us carry the economy.
And also carry the economy.
That's not to, you know, push aside any other, you know, race or whatever. But specifically being in Los Angeles, I felt like it was a specific attack on the Latino community as a whole.
I think, I mean, it has started with, I mean, it's not exclusive to Latinos who are not the only ones who are being sort of, you know, harassed and
right.
illegally detained and then right. removed from this country. There are people from all backgrounds, but the fact that Latinos have been specifically, as you said, out in the fields, and I've seen the work in Santa Cruz, I've been up to the farms in Northern California and on down. And I said, if you had to pick strawberries in 98 degree weather, first of all, try it. Just try it. Just get from one edge to the end. Just one row.
You wouldn't be able to do
it. You would die. Your back would fall out immediately. Okay. Right. You would not be able to handle it. It's brutally difficult work. Even if you're working on small scale organic, you know, whatever farms, it's difficult work.
It's hot.
It's physically taxing.
Yes.
And it's not well paid. Right. So, and Latinos have an over index. We over index in farm workers. We over index a lot in, you know, care, the healthcare facilities and all types of caregiving jobs, you know, so we are doing a lot of labor in this country that allows other folks to keep, you know, moving forward in their own lives. I do think, though, as you mentioned, the fact that so many of us are being sort of targeted here as a community, I think as a community, we need to get better at understanding each other, right? The Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Mexicans, you know, fifth generation Chicanos, you know, whoever it is, we all need to get, I think, a better understanding of our own communities and in their relation to each other, right? And the fact that, you know, there are different levels of power here. We're not all in the fields, right? We are all the way up the food chain. We've had some of the highest, you know, level positions at the federal government in some instances, maybe not president, but we've had cabinet member, you know, Latinos. So I think that all of us, it's a question of understanding that we're not all the same.
Right.
But that we do, if we are to create a sort of community, it has to be, I think, more nuanced. You know what I mean? We have to understand the layers of, you know, who we are and where we come from, you know, and why we're here. A lot of people have different motivations for being here. But I do think that these raids, I called it on CNN the day after, 2 days after the election, I was on the Abby Phillips show and I said, we may start to see workplace raids. I called it. You can go check the clip.
What year was that?
This was 2 days after the election.
This election.
This past election.
Oh, okay. This past
one. This past one. On the week of, I said.
What made you say that? What did you see prior to that that made you say that?
I already knew. I said, if you're going to target, if you want mass deportations, because that's what they were calling for during the campaign, right? I don't know if y'all remember, like they had the big sign rallies and everything. There's only a couple of ways to do that.
Right.
Where are you going to do that?
Right.
You're not just going to, well, as we're seeing, it's a little less effective going into the streets and picking off random people, right? But a more effective way, obviously, is to go to where many people are. And I called it. I said, if we start to see, we may start to see workplace raids. And that's exactly what we're starting to see, right? So it's something where, again, these are people trying to make a living. These are people who are trying to contribute to the economy. These are people who pay, you know, into Social Security and other benefits, right? So it's not like they're not contributing. So the economic model for what's happening is also terrible. It is, yes, our you know, fruits and vegetables and everything else will be affected, but it's also about the fact that these folks have been contributing to the economy, right? And to suggest that they haven't and that they're criminals and that they, I mean, it's just, the whole thing is just scary.
And it, you know, and it's when we see, I kind of don't want to go down this road, but I will. You know, the virtue signaling of it, because we have Latinos at the top that could do and make a difference and they stay quiet and they're silent, but then we'll do something else to virtue signal. And it's a big discussion online. A lot of people are catching wind of it and calling it out, you know, in that sense. And I think that that's, again, just disheartening because it's like you're Latino when it benefits you and when it looks good for press.
I think a lot of people are...
So you'll say something in Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Yo soy Latina, you know, or Latino or whatever, to be like, see, I resonate.
Yeah. And I find that so
cringe.
One note. And cringe, right, exactly. Like, it's just like, what is that? Yeah, it's very stereotypical almost. It's like playing into certain archetypes and... It's like that's.
But it's so, I guess it's always maybe happened. I thought, I was like, well, maybe it's just me, like whatever. But I'm seeing people online be like, yo, like, and they're like, it's so blatant. I don't know what's happened, you know, that just people are just like, so they're like, ick, like cringe, like what? Like,
because I think we're in a moment where we can't fake it anymore. Right. And I think that's what it is.
The inauthenticity.
Correct.
Is like, no,
it doesn't resonate at all. And I think that people are like, wait a minute, what? Because we're starting to see this affecting, you know, everybody from the people working in the fields to big media companies. What happened with Stephen Colbert, right?
Like,
I mean, not the same. I don't want to compare those. Stephen Colbert is going to be fine.
Right.
Yeah. People who are being separated, you know, in family court are not going to be fine. And so I don't want to put those in the same boat. But what I'm saying is that there is a sense, I think, among a lot of people that we've dealt with enough bullshit.
Right.
Right. And that's kind of what maybe has gotten us here.
Right.
And so I do believe people are saying Americans need to wake up. I think some of us are woken up, right? I think we are awake. We do see what's happening. And that may be the response to this sort of inauthenticity, right? People are like, yeah, but what are you actually doing? I mean, we're doing it with the Democratic Party. People are calling out, you know, you saw that our, I don't know if you're seeing what New Yorkers are talking about with the election here, but we had an election for not Democratic nominee. Zohran Mamdani won the Democratic nomination, and so many people are very upset about that. And the Democratic Party is not fully behind.
I haven't been following it as
well. Oh, yeah. And you'd think, well, wait a minute. This guy won fair and square. Like, didn't cheat. Didn't, you know, Adams was there and Cuomo was there. Yeah. They all had, and he won 40 some odd percent of the vote.
Wow.
Resounding, you know, yes, from, I think, New Yorkers. And he's a young, you know, he's a lot of folks compare him to AOC. But my point is that people like him, whether, you know, you voted for him or not, people, I think, like him because he's authentic.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't try. He's not, I mean, he is, he's running a campaign, obviously. I don't know the man, but I think the authenticity is what people are responding to, that he feels like he had a scavenger hunt the other day in New York. I think like 2,000 people showed up or some crazy. And like they followed this guy all over New York City on the subway, like looking for like clues. And it was just, dare I use the word that everybody's using now? Whimsical. You know what I mean? Right, it was what are you doing? And like all these people. So I think there's a hunger for authenticity.
And I think it's not something you can act.
No,
it's something that it's a feeling. It's a feeling.
You either have it or you don't, I think.
And I think people are tapping into that more than, I mean, authenticity is becoming a marketing campaign now for people in a lot of ways. And who knows? Maybe that was his marketing campaign. Maybe
he's a really good actor.
It's
like,
working,
you know what I mean?
Whatever it is, but I think it's working.
But even the acting of it, right? And so, you know, some of the things that I always ask here is I ask my guests, I say, you know, throughout life and kind of like the premise of the show, which is, you know, you stay in a race of your own, right? Sometimes you're up, you're going uphill, you're going downhill. Sometimes you plateau. Sometimes you come across a crossroads and there's just tumbleweeds and you don't know which way to go, right? So what piece of advice would you give, whether that's somebody looking to get into journalism, whether that's a Latino who's like, you know, well, what do I do? You know, do I find out about financial literacy? Like, what feedback would you give to someone, whether just in life, just in general, and like kind of how to stay in a race of their own?
Well, I'll say this. I could say this with confidence. You never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that is for better or worse. So that can mean the worst thing that you think could happen, but also the best thing that you think could happen might happen. And I say that because I've had both of those experiences, sometimes without, you know, planning it, sometimes just things happen, right? But I also believe that if you keep grinding, because I've had some very difficult moments, a lot of despair, a lot of dark times where you're just like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, right? I mean, having a baby, having a pandemic, changing my career. I mean, just all of these things. And now, you know, the advent of what's happening politically is a lot to handle. But I do think that somehow I keep grinding in the background and I keep on trying, even though sometimes through the tears, I keep trying quietly, building little things and because you got to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my biggest piece of advice. You need to be ready, because when you get that opportunity with the CEO in the elevator, because that's actually happened to me, like people are like, you need an elevator pitch. I'm like, no, you literally need an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Because you will, because I'm that person who will end up with the CEO and be like, hey, Bob, Mary, Sue, guess what?
Right.
As I've only been practicing it for this long, right? So I think stay ready, keep grinding in the background, right? But know that it can literally be the best thing. You have no idea how something's going to turn out. You just don't. And you have to go sometimes on faith, and that's something you learn over time.
Right. So thank you so much, Tanzina, for being here.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. Thank you for sharing all your wisdom. You know, I'm just glad that you're like, you're so passionate about all of this, right? From the financial literacy to what's going on politically speaking and immigration across the board, right? And then telling stories like, you know, I'm Black and I'm part of the top 1%. Like, Those stats would just blew my mind. So thank you so much for it, because I appreciate it. So this is Virgie Rodriguez for season 2 of A Race of Your Own. tune in, subscribe, leave comments, ask questions for Tanzina. Let us know what you think. And we'll see you soon. Bye.